This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That is right. Welcome in. It is Old School 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. As always, Austin Orman and Jay Foreman with you 3 to 6 weekdays here at 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Brought to you as always by the great people at the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. They got all sorts of great holiday specials. You might have heard the spot running. Different ones pretty much every day now through the end of the holiday season. Check them out online, themercadobutcher.com, or you can also take a look at their social media pages. Big shout out to the folks at the Mercado. 3 Lincoln locations and 1 up in Omaha. Get yourself there if you're doing a prime rib or whatever it is that you're cooking for Christmas dinner. The Mercado will absolutely hook you up. They've hooked me up plenty of times. They've hooked Jay Foreman up plenty of times. Let them help you. 402-464-5685. As always, the numbers if you want to be a part of today's show, or you can drop a comment, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter as well. We will see it and we will get to it. Jay, let's bring you in here. We might have the nicest thing Eric has ever said to you. He says, "My man, Jay."
Yeah, what's good? What you need, Eric? You know, when he's being nice, that means he needs something. What you need?
Something's changed. Situation's changed.
Or he bumped his head.
Or both.
Yeah.
Or would that be a double negative, double whammy? Yeah, would they outdo each other?
You don't have a big head like Nick.
I've never actually met Eric, so I can't confirm or deny that.
Eric, all right.
All right? Just all right?
Yeah, yeah. That means he's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah, he's Ebonics version of it. He's good.
I get you. I'm on the same page now. Jay, college football playoff actually starts tomorrow.
I know, crazy, right?
We're on the eve.
Yeah.
Feels like it snuck up on you. With that in mind, I'm sure we'll talk more about it tomorrow. But before any of the action actually kicks off, your top head coach and quarterback duo in the college football playoff is who?
I mean, without a doubt, it's Kirk Cignetti and Mendoza.
I mean, without a doubt, really.
I mean, you have the coach of the year and you have the Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, running a close second is obviously Ryan Day and Stane.
Ooh, you say obviously, like it's obvious. I disagree a little bit. I've got Cignetti and Mendoza at number 2 for me.
Who's number 1? Dan Lanning and Dante Moore?
You know I'm better than that.
I'm just asking.
I've got Kirby and Gunnar Stockton up there.
What's your metrics? Like what you're saying? Like what's like
Kirby's a 2-time champ.
I mean Gunnar
Georgia's playing better.
Yeah.
Gunnar Stockton was sneaky productive.
And he's a gamer.
Gamer. Last year, of course, there's the injury to Carson Beck. Gunnar Stockton comes in relief. Didn't go very well for Georgia, but, Jay, I did like the arm talent that Gunnar Stockton showed. At the end of the year, I looked up. I was surprised by the numbers that Gunnar Stockton put up for a Georgia team that seems to be playing better football now. I wasn't sure if I would count on Georgia to be rated as high as they are right now, but they're right back kind of where you think Georgia belongs after really the last 5-6 years. So maybe I'm a bit of a prisoner of the moment, but I do think that Kirby Smart overcame some of his late game woes that he had in some of those big moments early in his career, right? The random fake punt that he called against Alabama didn't go well. I think he's grown from that. I think he's learned. And as good as Cignetti has been, as good as Day has been, because that's my number three is Day and Seyin. Gunnar Stockton has impressed me this year. And Kirby's got the most rings of anyone in the field at this level, right? I know Cignetti's done his own fair share of winning, as has Kalen DeBoer at times as well. But George is playing well enough right now. I trust Kirby enough, and I've been impressed enough with Gunnar Stockton that, yeah, it's hard to pick against Cignetti and Mendoza, but yeah. I'm okay to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it with Gunnar Stockton, I mean, it's not going to be sexy, but I will tell you, under pressure, and when you need him to play well, big throw, comeback games. I mean, you think about Tennessee game, you know, they were, you know, struggling a little bit, and he got busy. Then obviously when he came off the bench out there with Carson Beck last year, I think it was more of his legs, but he's grown as a passer. They've addressed some of the issues on the wide receiver position that were woeful last year as far as drops. And they got that running game going, and he fits. They're probably, I mean, he fits what Kirby wants in a quarterback. And I think he's has more talent than his either stats or what they let him do would show. And you know, I mean, you're not going to get this far into the college football playoff without having a good head coach quarterback combination. But when you think of what you said, Kirby and Gunner, obviously Cignetti and Mendoza. And obviously Kirby probably gets a little bit more credit just because of the championships, and then Ryan Day and Seyin, and you know, maybe a close fourth is Dan Lanning and Dante Moore. I'm not really sure. I think Dante Moore I can envision him being a better pro than college quarterback. I think he has so much more room to grow.
Okay.
That he'll like, and obviously in the right system. I mean, you go to Cleveland Browns, you might as well just plan on retiring in 5 years, but
kind of reverse Kyler maybe.
Yes, I think Kyler peaked in college,
definitely.
And I think Dante Moore will peak in the right situation in the pros. And who knows? You know, it could be great the first couple of years, and he'd be like C.J. Stroud. You have a porous offensive line, and now he's starting to come back out of it right now. And but the combinations are going to be key. The matchups are going to be key. It's going to be interesting, man, just starting it tomorrow. I mean, you got to think also, let's not forget with Venerables and Mateer, if he's able to play, you know, if fully healthy Mateer, like when he's on one early in the year, Mateer. Yeah.
But I still wouldn't have them top three because Venerables that
but
much.
No. But it's closer than farther away.
Sure. Yeah.
And also Mateer, when obviously if healthy, 100%. He makes up that difference from Venerables. You know what I'm saying? Because he is a problem.
Sure.
With his legs and obviously throwing. And I think also, you know, when again, this is always if that's what I think the big difference between those top three, let's say even four, but mainly those top three. Mm-hmm. Let's say even four if you want to just be nice and put Lanning in.
Have they earned it? Have they earned being in that discussion?
They have. They're in there. They get a home game. That means sure they should, right? The difference is Simpson, DeBoer, Mateer, Venerables, the other team, and even with Crystal McGuire. Ball and Beck and McGuire and that the quarterback, he's not nearly in that. But when you think those three I just mentioned, it's all like if right?
Yeah.
So if Simpson's healthy, and
if DeBoer's in the black hoodie,
and DeBoer's in the black hoodie, and if they can get any resemblance of a run game, just anything. You know, in the run game. Then it's health with Mateer. Probably a stretch as far as coaching acumen and credibility with Venerables, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, with Carson Beck, it's more or less he fits Miami, kind of like Gunnar Stockton in Georgia. Heavy run team, play action. He's actually played really good this year. But you got all a crop of young receivers because when you really – the two losses that they have and you need a drive, is kind of miscommunication. It was mainly on the guys on the outside.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference. The continuity and efficiency between those top three and even put top four in there, that's the difference between the teams that we just talked about and then obviously the other teams right now obviously playing this weekend.
The intriguing team to me is going to be to see how Pete Golding handles the moment for Ole Miss. Trinidad Chambliss, I mean, I think has blown away anyone's wildest dreams for what he could have been. Back up to start of the year, Austin Simmons, you know, in and out of the lineup, more out than in. Chambliss has played really well. He's helped elevate that Ole Miss squad, Jay. But how do they respond to this moment? Ole Miss is one of those teams that's been knocking at the door of the playoff, but never made it in. So I'm really curious to see if Chambliss is legitimately that good. I mean, sure, you play in the SEC. Yeah, you're probably that good. Now this is the best of the best. Yeah. You know, you get a Tulane team that's going to come out super motivated, I would think, even with Summerall having taken the new head coaching job to avenge a loss from earlier in the year. Tulane's been on, you know, a similar stage to this before, faced a team that I would say is probably pretty similar to this Ole Miss team in a lot of respects in that USC team. They beat in the Cotton Bowl. I know that was a few years ago now, but I'm a believer in program DNA. I think there's something there, and I'm really curious to see if Golding and Chambliss specifically, as we talk about the duos, can lead maybe an Ole Miss surprise run, or if the moment's going to be too big for them.
Yeah, it's going to start off this weekend. You're going to see, you know, clock management and game time situation of football. You know, obviously decisions are going to be huge. Obviously, I think if they've beat Tulane before, obviously it's harder to do it again. I think they have a little bit, even a more of a leg up with the coach about to be the head coach at Florida, even though he's doing a solid for Tulane. It'll be interesting to see how Golden goes from defensive coordinator, which is very like singular focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to now you have to manage the whole game, but then also you have a little bit of bias that you're still kind of really invested in the defense. Now you could do that because Lane did that. The opposite was the offensive coordinator.
Right.
But this is, you don't have any games underneath your belt. You don't even get a chance like we were talking about. I mean, we don't have to continue talking about like Sharon Moore, where he got two games or three games here when Harbaugh was suspended. You know, so he had no kind of, you know, hey, I'll let you coach this game. Now it's just like, surprise. You know, you can take this over. It'll be interesting to see how he does. I think they do have DNA there. I think the one of the sneaky things that Lane did that people don't give him credit for is he really put a lot of funds and thought into the defense. He knew he could handle the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think with Simmons and Trinidad, you got to think Trinidad, I think, was a D2 last year.
Yeah, right? Fair State,
which is a really good program. Great program. Right. So it's not that far off from SDS, and but it's a really winning program. And Simmons is probably the better pro prospect, but this guy came in and really took over when Simmons was banged up. Now look at him. And that's where that DNA of recruiting very well, developing really well, the system is the same. So the continuity at least get you through round one. Now to make a magical run is really going to fall on the rookie head coach. And it's a super rookie head coach.
Right.
Because you just went from, you didn't have an off season. You didn't have 3 months. You had like 3 weeks,
right?
Not even if that. And it wasn't ideal 3 weeks because you didn't even know who was going to be on your staff up until maybe a week after Lane left, right? And you had to kind of negotiate to get Weiss back, and how much is he really invested? So there's a lot of things working against Ole Miss, but the one thing that is working with them is they got all the players they retained, and they are trying to focus on having a magical year. I saw something where it's going to bring $70 million to Oxford as far as hosting the game. So, you know, not only will they be winning on the field, ideally for them, but then obviously the economy as well.
Well, that goes to show you the power of a home game in this
playoff. That's
why
it's so important.
It's huge. I mean, the bye is great. And we talked about this last year, and I'm sure we'll talk about it as we continue and see how the second round games go. The importance of a bye at a time like this, there's an argument to be made that that's nice. But then, Jay, think about the difference between a bye in college football and a bye in the NFL. A bye in the NFL is 1 week.
Yeah.
Bye in college football is a month.
Yeah,
that's a big difference. Some teams use it better than others, and we can really see how they used it and how it affected them more after the game than before the game. Having to continue playing is a lot, but even these teams that, you know, have to play in the first round had a couple weeks or a few weeks to regroup. So it's kind of like everyone gets a bye, then there's a super bye.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, if you're playing well, you want to keep playing. You want to play in that first game. If you're not, you want to kind of get happy and healthy and you know, see where you're at. So how you handle, I guess, I call it mini celebration of getting the bye. I don't know if you get more money in the next round as far as the share of the, you know, if you're hosting or not. But, it's going to be interesting to see moving forward how teams, you know, once they figure out maybe they're not going to be the one or two seed, the fight for the third and fourth seed moving forward.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take a lot of posturing and maneuvering to control the media, control the narrative. Style points will make a lot of headway. And who's on the committee to get you in there? Because you're not only thinking about more money for your team. I don't know if you get money for hosting those games and, you know, from the college football playoffs NIL or whatever, but you're thinking about the local economy here. Just thinking about right now, if Nebraska was getting ready to play so-and-so on Friday or Saturday night.
Imagine how juiced up we'd be.
This place would be crazy right now.
Off the chain.
It would be people taking weeks off.
Yeah.
and let alone if it was a cold game, it would be really off the chain because we'd think we'd have a really, really big advantage.
Hypothetically, when Nebraska makes the college football playoff, Jay, let's say it's expanded to 16, mm-hmm. because I assume that's right around the corner. Call your shot now. What seed does Nebraska get when it first qualifies for the college football playoff?
I guess the top 8 or 9. Yeah, like one of the, like Bama or something like that. I think that's what you get in. I mean, that's a great place to start, mm-hmm. you know? I wouldn't mind it.
See, to me, I think it's an 8. If we're still in the 12-team deal, I could see Nebraska sliding in at like 7, mm-hmm. potentially. Maybe a little different because it's straight seating now. But I think Nebraska would be at least 7th in the pecking order of the power conference teams. Depending on how the layout of the 16 works. Yeah, I do think that the first time Nebraska makes the playoff, I think that the stadium carries enough recognition, the name carries enough recognition. If it's between 8 and 9 for Nebraska,
we're getting 8.
They're getting 8.
Yeah, you're getting 8. Yeah. And it'll be so much pressure because you had actually done the work to deserve 8 by that time. It means you had actually dug yourself out of the depths of hell and obviously been pretty consistent, and you had had to have gotten or had to have beaten a decently high ranked team on a national TV game, not on some like 11 o'clock on FS2 or something, right? You really, you made some noise, and then you were able to complete the mission at the end of the season as well. So, yeah, I mean, Nebraska, I think everybody's waiting for it to happen. Mm-hmm. That's why this year was such a big deal. You know, everybody was waiting for it. I mean, it was a great opportunity. A lot of things would have had to happen the right way that sometimes didn't. But, you know, look, they're closer than they are farther, which is great. But the hard thing is to get from closer to arrived is probably the hardest part to do.
When you look at this college football playoff field, Jay, who's under, aside from, say, Tulane and James Madison, who's playing with house money in the college football playoff?
Ooh, I would say Ole Miss. And I say Ole Miss because you've had a legendary season for them. You went through some turmoil and drama. And you're playing a team that you, as long as you don't go out there and lose the game, that you're going to get past it to the second round. So, and if you lose, you can blame Lane. You'll take all the credit for success. Pete Golden will get the credit for success. You lose, it's Lane's fault because he left Ole Miss when everything was set up for him here, and it distracted the team. Versus Oklahoma or Alabama, DeBoer would get probably some people, you know, sending mail to his house if he loses. And then you look at the other side. I wouldn't say Oklahoma backdoor their way in it, but they, you know, Brett Venables was on the hot seat for a little bit. Now it's got really cooled off. So you're really still on a lukewarm hot seat still. Mm-hmm. So if you lose one,
you turn it down from level 2 to level 1.
And you're at home.
Yeah.
You lose that game at home.
I would say in terms of house money, Ole Miss came to mind first for me, but I do think there's an element of, are we really this good without Lane? Because Ole Miss hasn't had that much success, right? Mm-hmm. It was Hugh Freeze cheating era. Yeah. And what? In our lifetimes.
Nothing.
Really. Ole Miss has never been a
because they weren't even good when they had Eli.
Right. Nebraska saw them when they had Eli.
Yeah.
Down in Shreveport. And it's to that point that on the one hand, because of that fact, there shouldn't be much pressure on them. Okay, you made it. But they've been knocking at the door for so long.
Yeah.
I can see a world where Ole Miss fans say, at least have that question in the back of their mind, where do we go from here? Like, we like Coach Golding, but we know that Lane got us there. We're knocking on the door. Will we ever be back?
Yeah,
Oklahoma should be back.
Yeah.
But for them, I think they have the easy built-in excuse of, well, Mateer's still playing hurt.
Yeah.
He pushed through it. Shout out to our defense. But look at this. The committee gave us a close rematch.
It's hard to beat a team twice.
Right. Yeah. We'll be back. We trust. I mean, we're Oklahoma. You know, yes, first time we made it in a while, but we've been here.
And the best
we'll
one,
be back.
Best part, Texas didn't make it. So then now you are playing with really house money.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, to me, Oklahoma's the house money team right now.
Yeah, you got some excuses, but then it's that's probably the most unique game, because going on the road to Oklahoma, even though you got, you know, you got to beat them twice, that's a hard feat going on the road, and you haven't been playing well. So
right,
a lot of things that would have had to gone right for Alabama in the last 2 or 3 weeks to play, put on a better performance. You know, at Oklahoma, somehow, some way, you're going to have to get Ryan Williams out of his own way. Yep. That hasn't happened all year, let alone you're going to have to try to run the ball against that defense on the road. But the fan base, the alumni, the powers that be, they feel like they're Alabama. You could go to Mars and beat a bunch of aliens. You know what I'm saying? So that's the pressure that they're on. But Oklahoma is a little bit house money. But that Ole Miss thing is going to be interesting, because the easy thing is to blame Lane. And also, he's very blamable.
You don't say.
But then, you know, I still think that they have house money, because say that there's, you know, the game hinges on, you know, a last play, but it was probably set up in the second or third quarter by mishaps of maybe burned a timeout or situational football, or didn't, you know, ask for a replay or on a first down or something from Golden. You have the built-in excuse of Lane Kiffin.
You do.
And so everything for him is only going to be positive. It's his first time being a head coach. Yes, he's trained under Nick Saban and obviously Lane, but doing it in the live in effect without any offseason or obviously preseason, which would be spring ball, favors well for built-in excuses.
The way that things have gone for Ole Miss, I'm kind of rooting for them to make a run to probably the semis, right? Because beating Tulane, they're expected to. They're relatively large favorites coming up on Saturday. But then if they get a shot at Georgia, they beat Georgia, at least they have, okay, we gave it our best shot, right? We weren't just Lane. There was resolve on the team. We feel confident about the future under Coach Golding. If you just beat Tulane, it would have been, you know, kind of, dare I say, kind of Penn State-ish. I mean, Penn State made it one step further. But okay, we took care of business beating the teams you were supposed to. How big of an accomplishment will their fans really think it is? Certainly more at Ole Miss than at Penn State. Yeah. But I think if Ole Miss, if this is it for them, and they don't make the playoff again in the 2020s, or they're borderline and they're left on the cutting room floor, for their fans' sake, I would like to see them win too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, but I also, here's the other kind of, I guess, caveat or whatever you want to call it. Let's say they go and do what you said. They make a run to the semifinals. Say they get to the, they get to the Final Four.
Let's say they're facing Ohio State.
Right. Does LSU have any buyer's remorse? We went through all that. We changed it. We definitely won't be getting to be able to fire him for cause, for obvious reasons.
Right.
And then he's like, here's Al Golden took this team after you didn't kind of
rip Pete Golding.
Or Pete Golden, excuse me. I can't think Al Golden. Notre Dame. Or actually, I'm looking at the Bengals right now on ESPN. But so he's able to take a team that you.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Rip the fabric from offensively, piece together a roster, reshape the defensive kind of roster or coaching roster, and we win two games in the college football playoffs. See, we're better off without you.
Better off without you. All Ewing stuff, theory.
All that stuff you had, now somebody else is going to come in and appreciate it.
The flip side of that question, Jay, is who's under the most pressure? Let's take a break. We'll talk about who's under the most pressure in the college football playoff when we get back to old school.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Continuing our college football playoff discussion here in hour one of Old School. I'm Austin Norman. He's Jay Foreman. Jay, we talked about the house money teams. Now, who is under the most pressure in the opening round of the college football playoff? And if there's a team, in the second round that you think is under pressure, they can fit as well. But let's just start with the games this weekend, the first four games that we'll see. Who is under the most pressure?
Unfortunately, it comes with the job, DeBoer. And you don't even know where the pressure comes from. I think the AD and everyone else, I think the rational people are really happy with him.
Mm-hmm.
And surprised.
Pleasantly.
After that Florida State game, it brought out the best in him. Mm-hmm. It did. And I think it'll continue to bring out the best in a different coach. I think very rarely do you, because here's two ways coaches generally handle pressure like Florida State. They go get another job. They just shoot you the bird and say, I'm out of here. Take their ball and go home and get another job.
Mm-hmm.
Or their back's against the wall and it brings something out of them that people hadn't seen yet. And that's exactly what you're getting from him. But I think he's still under pressure from, Paul Fenenbaums and all these other guys that probably never were truly sold on him. And they aren't the decision makers, but just their
voice carries weight, whether it should or not.
It's the same, but in the same fans that are unrealistically thinking Alabama should be undefeated and be, number one in the college football playoff rankings, and they should never lose a game. No game should be close as 20 points. So it's that's where the pressure comes from. Everybody else, I think everybody else is pretty satisfied where they're at. I mean, you got to leave Brett Venables alone. He's in there. He's hosting the game, so that, mm-hmm. that kind of lets him get some leeway. And of course, Dan Lanning is fine.
Ooh, see, I'm going to push back on that. So
you think he has pressure from the powers that be, or just
pressure in general. Not he's in no danger of losing his job. Kupsker says, I'm feeling kind of confident about Oregon losing this weekend. It feels like a problem if Oregon can't play their three best wideouts.
Oh, if they lose this weekend. Oh, he under pressure,
but they're not going to lose.
No, but
at home. If they lose at home to a James Madison team that played one Power 5 team in Louisville and got manhandled in the trenches, it's a problem. Here's why I say Oregon. I don't think there should be a bunch of pressure on him, but it's in the back of his mind and a bunch of his players' minds. We were the one last year and we got knocked out. I think Oregon is still seeking some of that external validation where they've been good for a long time.
That's where the pressure goes. External validation.
External validation.
Realistic now. We've seen you with the nice uniforms. We've seen you guys put guys in the league, and all this other stuff, but mm-hmm. you've always seemed to let us down.
Oregon probably thinks they're better than Indiana. They've been better longer than Indiana, mm-hmm. but they've accomplished as much as Indiana. They've both been a one seed.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all both franchise programs have accomplished.
And they both have won the Big Ten,
too. Right. Yeah. They've accomplished the same level of stuff. For Oregon, I think this is a program that wants to prove that, Indiana's a cute story. We've been here longer. It's our turn to win a game or two and break through and prove that we're more than just a flashy program.
Yeah. I mean, and when you speak on it that way, I think it's the external pressure. And I think it's more validation pressure.
Yeah.
And they have to here's where they're fighting the same things that we're talking about. Aesthetically, it has to be pleasing. Because you got to think, just last year when they were the number one seed,
mm-hmm.
Idaho had you more than on the ropes. You kind of got lucky against, with that whole thing you did against Ohio State with the running the clock off, and then you couldn't get another play. They couldn't get another playoff. It was like a little, they changed the rule right away.
Right.
And then how you just got trounced in against Ohio State. You just got obliterated.
Yeah.
And start to finish. And embarrassed. And quite frankly, Penn State gave you all that you can handle in the Big Ten Championship. So you are fighting that external pressure of how are you in a big time moment against like opponents. Now, if they only squeak by James Madison by like 9 points, you're under more pressure next week. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they're fighting the unknown pressure, and then they're fighting their own pressure within themselves.
Yeah.
And you're fighting some program pressure. Mm-hmm. Because you can't live and die anymore. You know, you're like the 10 uniform things when you go there, like how many, 12 different, all the uniform combinations. That was like their version of NIL before it became.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they mm-hmm. were probably giving some players some money underneath the table. Well, now that everybody can, with the rev share, nobody cares about that anymore because everybody has alternate uniforms, you mm-hmm. know, and yeah, they got a lot of pressure.
A&M or Miami? Any pressure on either of those schools?
No. Elko's locked in. A&M's had a phenomenal year. You know, Miami's on the road. They probably feel like they have the toughest matchup as far as, you know, healthy quarterback and all that and dynamic.
There's more external validation pressure on Miami to me.
Yeah, this is, well, because of the teams that Notre Dame's not in. And yes. Notre Dame had been playing well and had played Texas A&M very well.
It's not Miami's fault. Yeah, but there's a lot of pressure on them to rep the ACC and prove that, you deserve to be in, you know, hand-wringing aside.
And also, it seems like nobody's throwing darts at Alabama because it shouldn't have came down to Notre Dame-Miami. It's actually Notre Dame and Alabama. Yeah. But everybody, you know, mm-hmm. you have the built-in hatred between Notre Dame and Miami. So there's probably pressure there, but not, you know, nothing's going to bad happen. But Miami is facing kind of like Oregon. Are you really for real?
Right.
You're playing essentially the number one team in the nation up until they lost to Texas. And they were dominant.
Yeah.
At times. Oh, yeah. Now it's the South Carolina game, not so much. But then when they came back, they were dominant.
Dominant second half.
Yeah. And they put it on them. I don't know. That's going to be a game. You're talking about pressure. If Texas A&M happens to lose that game at home, would they play at Kyle Field?
Yeah.
With 100 some people?
There'll be more than 12 men on the field.
There'll be a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. That's a very expensive roster. People haven't talked about enough how bad their defense has been against good opponents.
Yeah.
Now, their defense does play well at home, but Miami lines up and pounds the football. This is the biggest offensive line they will see, including anybody in their league. This mm-hmm. is probably the best offensive line they'll see, including everybody in their league. They are committed to the run and to embarrass you.
See, Chris Ballas, it's where he comes from. Right. It's what he wants to do.
So we'll see about that defense. And the pressure could be turned up as you lose a home game. You lose to Miami on top of that. Mm-hmm. And
neither team been in the playoff.
And the year that Texas isn't in it. And so all eyes are, you know, on Aggieland.
And
you dookie down your leg.
And
you just get your.
And they're in oil country.
And they're oil country.
Yeah, I'm talking about Texas Tech, too.
Oh, yeah.
Texas. Who's Tech. Under more pressure, A&M or Tech?
Tech, they're both the same because Texas Tech is like, all right, let's see what you do now. Is it, you know, top four seed, you're going to be playing a really good opponent now. Mm-hmm. Not somebody that you know, mm-hmm. most likely, or played against, like, you know, BYU, you played them twice. You're facing external pressure because of the money you spent.
Yeah.
Let's see if it's really worth it. Last year, you had Ohio State. They said they paid like $20 million to retain guys and brought back NFL guys. Mm-hmm. And when they lost to Michigan, it was like they were the butt of everybody's jokes. Now, when you look back at it with the way that they went through the magical run, let's see what Texas Tech does with all eyes on them. And you've been saying this team could travel. They've mm-hmm. been saying it from Lubbock. And you listen to and they got to believe it. They feel like with their defensive line, their weapons on offense, and the way that they play physical with two really good linebackers, that they can go play in the SEC. They can go and beat Ohio State in the Big Ten. What mm-hmm. are we about to see? And that's where you can't just look like you were competitive. Oh, and maybe next year? No, no. Whatever that $9 million off or defensive line, you got to play. It got to pay off today.
I think we'll see how much pressure Texas Tech has on it, especially internally, when we look back in 5 years. If Tech is still spending at this level and they're still at or around the top of the Big 12, there was no pressure, regardless of how this has gone. I mean, this is their best season in school history, bar none. Even the year they beat Texas on the Crabtree walk-off, this is better.
Yeah.
This has surpassed it. Right now, I think they're closer to a house money team, but, you know, is this a donor base? And, you know, we look at Campbell, what's his thought? It seems sustainable now, but it always does until it runs out. Mm-hmm. You know, we can always convince ourselves that, yeah, this is going to be the dynasty. This is the one that lasts. They have money forever. Well, you lose this one. This is just the first step in, is the investment really worth it? We gave it a run. It worked out for Texas Tech softball, right? In Kennedy, the player that they paid $1 million for. $1 million in softball, that's a lot of money, but compared to what they're spending in football, that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
But if you're going to consistently pour $25+ million into football outside of revenue sharing, just to lose in the first round of the playoff, you're not going to win without it, but you can sure as heck lose without it.
Yeah.
The same way, you know, you can lose with it.
Well, then also there's pressure outside of even all these games. If the, you know, Texas Tech, that's always the punchline with, you know, their team.
Yeah.
You know, money well spent, roster that's bought. And then, you know, Coach McGuire's obviously got the right guys and paid the right guys, so they're all invested into the team. But if they have success, Texas Tech, right, win a game mm-hmm. and then get to the Final Four, you know who has more? Who has where the pressure goes? Everybody else that thinks that they're that either are close to getting in to the college football playoffs or yeah. think that they're close. That means that not only you have to match that $20 million or $25 million that Texas Tech spent on their roster, which I would like to see that ledger. You have to spend more because you got to make up ground. Mm-hmm. That means you got to go steal a player from one of these, you know, blue blood schools or big, yeah. more big time schools. You might have to steal a mid-level player and then you have to pay more. So it puts more pressure on the financial commitment of the donors and the universities based on what this team does. Because this team is literally bought as far as the defensive line goes.
Yeah.
Ohio State was retain our NFL players. Mm-hmm. We've developed, these are homegrown guys besides Caleb Downs, right? But that's because Nick Saban left.
Right.
That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, more readily available investment, maybe more conservative. Okay, this worked out here. Now, if you're getting all this money NIL-wise, you're not really, if you're in the portal to the tune of what Texas Tech did, you're not having homegrown talent. You're trying to go buy them. So that's why the success or lack thereof of Texas Tech either puts a lot of pressure on teams or doesn't.
Let's talk about a couple more Big Ten teams there at the top then, Jay. Is there more pressure on Indiana because they won the Big Ten championship than there would have been had they lost the Big Ten championship? Is Indiana playing with house money because they just won the Big Ten, it's year two, and they're the number one seed, and oh, it's cool for Indiana? Or is there pressure on Indiana to continue to validate, you know, the fact that this isn't just Indiana, this is Indiana?
No, there's pressure on them to validate. Because there's still people out there that think that you're not for real. There's still people out there that don't think that Mendoza should win the Heisman. And there's people out there that don't think that in 2 or 3 years, Kirk Cignetti be winning at the same clip he is right now. There's pressure.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure. Because if you're the number one seed, you finally beat Ohio State, or you beat Ohio State, you win the Big Ten championship, and you lose the first time you get on the field, I don't care who it is, there's pressure. I told you so. That's what they're going to say. I told you they're just a flash in the pan. They've had a pretty easy schedule, and then they got lucky against Penn State and Ohio State. They actually should have two losses, so they can take the one loss and go home.
I think there's also some pressure on them because of what happened last year. Now, the saving grace for Indiana is that I don't think either Oklahoma or Alabama are in the same stratosphere
as Notre Dame
Ohio State.
Oh yeah,
who
yeah,
was the eight
yeah.
last year?
Yeah.
Shoot, I think even Tennessee last year is comparable to this year's 8 and 9
yeah.
in some way. So I think Indiana is a little bit safer there. The other team then, Jay, is Ohio State. On the one hand, it's Ohio State. There's always pressure to win. The added element of pressure is, let's say that Ohio State gets bounced by the winner of Miami and A&M. They look rusty, kind of like Oregon did last year.
Mm.
Are there any Ohio State people saying, man, last year is the fluke? Ryan Day can't get over them, can't win the big one. Stars just aligned for him. Does he enter on a warmer seat than you might think if Ohio State gets bounced in 2 weeks?
No, I think that national championship, man, keeps it nice in the room temperature. He's good. But there will be doubters because then they'll say, well, he wasn't focused because his name's been in every NFL job. But then they have the built-in excuse of Hartline's gone and all that. So I don't think he'll get in under any hot seat based on not winning, you know, the whole championship.
What do you expect from that offense with Hartline gone? Because I thought it was better when he wasn't the OC. Day's Colin plays, what changes? Yeah.
I think the Big Ten championship set up every way so Ohio State was at a disadvantage. You went on the road to beat Michigan, right?
Stay on the road to play Indiana.
Stay on the road to be Indiana. So, and that's it.
Their backyard.
That game takes a lot out of you up there in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And then Hartline takes the job. I think it was just one of those things. It was just the details and lack of execution, and it wasn't just all invested. So I think overall, I like the offense. I like Hartline as a caller from game three on this year versus the first year. First year was not good.
Looked like a first time coordinator.
That's why they brought in Chip.
Kelly, yeah.
So there could be a little bit of pressure. I could see hopefully Ryan Day takes over. I don't think there's any pressure. Now, I will tell you, like I was going to say, if they had lost or had lost to Michigan, mm-hmm. and then they lose, and if they lost the second round, even if they lost to Michigan, they wouldn't be hosting.
Right.
So let's say they were either playing this first weekend, to lose to Michigan and maybe don't look either you lose this game or don't look good and get trounced the next round. Oh, there'd be some smoking. There would be a little bit of the hot seat.
Some hand wringing.
Oh, it would. Least. It would be because you'd lost to Michigan four or five times in a row. You're so good on offense. I mean, then you lose two in a row to Ohio State. Yeah, it probably wouldn't be very good.
I will say the least pressure is on James Madison as the last team in the field. Arguably, Jay, the last time James Madison was in a tournament, they were a 12 seed and they knocked off a Big Ten team. That was James Madison over Wisconsin in the opening round of the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So watch out for the Dukes, right where they want to be.
Yeah, they'll be competitive. Like that. They'll be competitive. Also, I think there's no pressure on Tulane either. Everything is just hunky-dory. Coach is going to coach this last game. Let's go out there and give them one last good show. Ole Miss about to bust, are you? Sorry to tell you. You thought it was bad this time. We're going to run it. We're going to ring that bell on you.
Now we're just mad.
Yeah.
It's not your fault, but got a mercy kill you.
That's right.
He's Jay Foreman. I'm Austin Norman. This is Old School. Your chance to win $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings with a trivia question after this.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up hour one of Old School here on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'd like to shout out our friends at Buffalo Wings and Rings, two Lincoln locations. Got one just down the block from us at 68th and O, the other one down at 40th and Old Cheney. Your chance to win $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings. Got a trivia question for you. We will do the old fashioned favorite over, under, or push. Jay, after Emmett Johnson was named an All American, a first team All American to be precise, how many first team All-Americans have there been in Nebraska football history?
Oh, man.
How many first team All-Americans have there been in Nebraska football history?
28.
Jay says 28. Over, under, or push Jay's answer of 28. 402-464-5685. We'll give it to texter number 7 in honor of the Foreman scale. It goes without saying, Jay, heck of a year for Emmett Johnson. First team from Sporting News as an all-purpose player. Second team all-purpose, and you look at the Football Writers Association of America. Walter Camp, second team. AP, second team as running back as well.
Yeah.
Nebraska can't go that long between All-Americans again, though. It had been a while since Nebraska's last one. It had been a while since Nebraska's last first team all-conference player as well. I mean, that's just one outward kind of showing of just where you're at as a program. On the flip side, Iowa's had a first team All-American 7 years in a row, mostly on the offensive line.
Yeah. And they've been more consistent as far as winning. And winning, obviously a decent number of games every year. So I think I think that's remedied if you win. So that's where everybody thinks, okay, we just need to go get 5-star kids and then they'll eventually be, I call it the Chia Pet syndrome. Put water on them, you know, that you don't have to do anything. Just let them sit there, mm-hmm. and then they're going to be automatically All-American. There's probably, you know, a lot of more five-star guys that end up being bust and not reaching potential versus guys that do. So what I'm saying is you still got to develop them, and part of developing is getting them to understand winning brings you more individually, but more importantly, it brings everything to everybody else collectively.
The answer is over. Jay, you were about 25% of the way there. Per Nebraska football's tweet, Emmett Johnson becomes the 111th first-team All-American in Nebraska football history.
I can see that. I was going to say even 40, but I mean, there'd be a time that, I mean, there was a run where Nebraska had won at least one for
decades, it felt like.
Yeah, like 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's not all the same guys. And there's time that they had multiple, too. I mean, so, mm-hmm. yeah, I can see that. I was definitely off on that one.
Yeah, that's sorry, all right. Callers. That's all right. Brian, you are the winner. We'll get in contact with you 30 days to come in and pick up your prize. Again, that prize, $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings, to Lincoln location 68th and O, as well as 40th and Old Cheney here in town. Plenty more to get to throughout the course of the show. We'll have Thirsty Thursday coming up next to start off the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to try Evan Bland again. We'll see if the phone line is fixed. If not, we got some coaching news, some in the Big Ten and some in the SEC. If we can't talk to Evan, we will do that coming up at 4:30. He's Husker Hall of Famer Jay Foreman. I'm Austin Norman. We got Thirsty Thursday. Kevin Meyer coming up next.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.